evening, everybody, and welcome to Moving Train Radio. My name is Jeff. I'm calling from New Jersey, and we've got Heidi and Dave in Minnesota. And our topic today is Hillary Rodham Clinton, former Secretary of State, former United States Senator, First Lady, former First Lady of the United States, former First Lady of the State of Arkansas.
Former Gold War Girl.
I don't think anybody has a neutral opinion of her. So she is widely believed to be a potential candidate for president, although she hasn't declared yet. And so we thought it would be a good idea to talk about the pros and cons. Are you ready, you know, hashtag ready for Hillary, or your hashtag not ready for Hillary? And we've got somebody on the line. I want to give a couple of unrelated shout-outs. One to our friend Michael Wilbekin, who can't be with us. He's rehearsing for a song and dance cabaret show tonight. And I hope he gets some YouTube videos to send to us. So break a leg, Mike. I hope you'll be entertaining. You know,
yeah.
Guarantee entertainment. Another shout out to a woman named Ashley Sanders. She's a cousin of Erica Crippen, which is a case we had talked about a couple of times last week and the week before. Erica was killed, allegedly, by her husband. Her body had been missing for 2.5 months, and her body was found a week ago, and Ashley and her family have started a, I don't know if they started an actual foundation yet, but they are they're dedicating their time to promoting domestic violence awareness and setting up a mechanism for assistance to victims of domestic violence. So we'll probably hear I'm hoping I'd ask her to come on. She may or may not come on a future show. So if you live in the Philadelphia, South Jersey, Philadelphia area, check out the page Team Bring Erica Home. There's a couple of events planned, networking events planned towards the end of this week, one in Glassboro, New Jersey, and one in Philly. Kudos. You know, my heart breaks for that family, and they're trying to turn a tragedy into some kind of a positive thing. So good for you. We're here to talk about Hillary. I got a couple of things to say. I voted for her in the 2008 primary in New Jersey, which I believe she won. I supported her pretty much to the end, even though I didn't like the way her campaign was being run. It was, she was clearly being, by May, it was evident that she was her campaign staff was not serving her well, and I thought that she was the only one tough enough to fight the Republican machine, and I was wrong. So I wanted to see the first woman president, and I also wanted to see the first black president. I wanted both of those things, so bad I could taste it. But unfortunately, we could only have one. So we can, you know, wonder what a Hillary presidency would have been like, and if she was elected, we could have wondered what a Barack Obama presidency would be like. One thing, I don't think that Hillary Clinton would have gone into the presidency under the delusion that she would get cooperation from Republicans.
Right.
What kind of a president she would be, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if she would be much different. There's different angles to this. You know, do we really want, you know, we don't, you know, there's no more Roosevelt running for president. There's no more Rockefellers. There's no more, you know, Jeffersons or Washingtons or Lincolns or Adams running for president. But we do have, you know, this going back to, you know, 1988, we have a possibility of another Clinton and another Bush running for president. There aren't even any Kennedys running for president anymore.
No.
We could talk about whether a dynasty is a good thing or a bad thing, or if it doesn't matter. So we do have a caller. I'm going to shut up and let Heidi talk, and then we can call her if you want to come on and listen, and then we'll you know how it works. And hopefully we'll have some other people calling in who had posted on our page and said that they would call in. So we want to talk about both sides. And let's go.
So I'll bring the caller on, but I was going to give my little soliloquy too about Hillary Clinton. So I believe this is Dave, because it's the Massachusetts area code. So Dave, you are on. I was just going to give my two cents, and then you can give your two cents, Dave. You know, unlike you, Jeff, I was a Barack Obama supporter from the beginning. And I think I've mentioned this before on the show, you know, watching him in the 2004 Democratic National Convention. Both Dave and I looked at each other and went, oh, my God, that's our first black president. I mean, no problem. So I was, just like Chris Matthews, we both got the tingle up our leg, and I never looked back. I had friends saying, well, what about Hillary? Why don't you look at, you know, what she, you know, maybe she has more experience. You know, and kind of like what you said, she's tough. She won't let Republicans get away with anything. And I just never could, I don't know why. I just never could get myself over that hump. And I watched, you know, I'm a political junkie, so I watched literally everything. You know, CNN and MSNBC had them constantly at their, at their rallies, at their speeches. Barack was here a couple of times. I went, three times. So we went twice. We were going to go to the other one, but we missed it. But we went to his rallies at, they were both at Target Center, both of them, 20,000 people at each of them, waited hours to see him, and he was electrifying after waiting all that time. I'd seen Bill Clinton years and years ago, early 90s, here as well. Barack was a little bit more electrifying than Bill was, although Bill talks longer. But I was never able to get as impressed and into Hillary, I guess. When it started to look like he was going to win, her campaign started to take a decidedly what I thought was ugly turn. Bill made some comments. I remember she was asked about Barack Obama's, you know, legitimacy as a president. You know, where was he born? And she made some side comments that was, in my opinion, ridiculous. I mean, you know, I understand that you are, you know, you're running a campaign and you're trying to, you know, win this nomination. You're trying to get to that number. But, you know, let's be honest. You're both on the same side. You act like adults. You don't go down that road of the birthers do, that you make it sound like he's not a legitimate presidential nominee. You just don't. And when she started going down that, you know, it was a brief comment. It wasn't, you know, she didn't say it a couple of times or 10 times or any of that. But, you know, that really angered me to the point where I was, you know, I just stopped watching her. And it took me a while. And it sounds silly because I have, you know, she's never met me. I've never met her. I've never met any of these people. But it just angered me that she would go there, that she would go to that ugly place. And, you know, she had that, for me anyway, she made me feel that she thought that she was destined for this spot, that she was destined to be the President of the United States. It was kind of like Ann Romney saying it's their turn. You know, I kind of got the same feeling from Hillary. So it took me a while to get over my feeling of anger and resentment toward Hillary and Bill, both of them really. And I just, you know, once Barack won and he became president and then she became the Secretary of State, it took a while, but I felt a little bit better about her. I mean, for me at this point, this is my feeling. My feeling is, While I agree that she would be great for the job insofar as she has a lot of foreign policy experience, she has a lot of experience with, you know, dealing with Republicans that are trying to go after her. I think that's also an Achilles heel for her and Bill. And what I mean by that is they open themselves up, in my opinion, they open themselves up to things that make it easy for them to be attacked, if you will. Case in point, the case in point, the email thing. I mean, you know, I'm fine with her explanation, but on the other hand, what the hell are you thinking? You know that you have people out there that will literally have a fit if you do anything that is any bit remotely possible to be untoward or wrong or appear that you're above everybody else. What would possess you, knowing that you're probably going to run for president again, what would possess you to not just do the emails through the federal, through the government, through the federal email source? You don't have to worry about all this other bullshit. And I don't care if you did anything or not, because I don't think that she probably did. I don't think she would be that stupid, but it still opens yourself up to something. It just makes no sense to me why you would do that. And, you know, through the almost, what has it been, 6.5 years of Obama's presidency, Republicans have looked to and tried as hard as they can to find a scandal in his cabinet or with him. You know, everything from the birther issue, Benghazi, to, the suit that he wears, to, you know, literally everything that they try, it falls flat. They can't, you know, they find out that there's nothing really going on. You know, he didn't do what they think he did, or they, you know, nothing is sticking. What I don't want, if it was Hillary Clinton as our president, is that literally there is a scandal for everything. You know, when Bill was president, it was obviously the Monica stuff, which obviously has nothing to do with Hillary. But, you know, there was the travel office thing, and there was Whitewater, and it was a constant, what have they done in their past, and are we going to look at this, and did they have anything to do with that, and what about Vince Foster, and all this crap. And I understand that most of this is coming from Republicans, that they're trying to take down a very, very influential and powerful Democrat. And they both are extremely powerful Democrats. But when I see them opening themselves up to something like she did with this email thing, it's just you're making it easy. You're writing the script for the other side when you do stuff like that. You know, President Obama's nickname is No Drama Obama. He doesn't do all this bullshit. His past is his past. You know, birthers can try to make up whatever they want. You know, he's a Muslim terrorist, you know, whatever crap. But at the end of the day, anybody that has, you know, half a brain about this stuff knows that none of that stuff is true. And spending 8 years listening to every possible Hillary scandal is just not a way to move anything forward. And so that scares me, and that concerns me. Do I think that she's very, you know, influential? Yes. Do I think that she could do a good job? She probably could do a good job. I'm not at this point for me ready to take that leap. I just am not. And, you know, I just told you about a couple of the reasons why I don't have I don't feel that way at this point. Can my mind change? Yes. I don't know where we're going to go. But, you know, and as far as other viable candidates, I love Elizabeth Warren and I love Bernie Sanders. I don't think that either one of them are going to run. Bernie has some issues. Elizabeth Warren has some issues, and none of them are bad necessarily on paper, but they could be. Martin O'Malley is a great possibility.
Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat.
I'm sorry, what?
Bernie Sanders is not a Democrat.
Right. Bernie Sanders is an independent.
Everybody knows that.
Caucuses with Democrats.
Right, yeah. He's an independent, but he's technically a socialist. And you start to, you know, and he calls himself a socialist. So it's not like I'm making anything up off the top of my head.
Yeah.
He identifies as a socialist. And as soon as you hear the S word, people will freak out because there's a portion of the population that does not understand what being a socialist actually means. So that's a problem. His age is a problem. He would be in his mid-80s if he did two terms. Yeah.
Do you think, I got a lot to say, but, you know, but just right there, do you think his socialism or his economic policies are anything to the left of Elizabeth Warren's?
I think he is to the left of Elizabeth Warren. I think
okay.
he's to the left
no,
of
yeah.
most people.
Yeah. Well,
I love Bernie.
I mean, Elizabeth
Sanders.
Warren's to the left of most people too, but yeah.
Right, that's very true. I love Bernie Sanders. In a perfect world, Bernie Sanders would be my president. You know, and vice president would be like an Alan Grayson, because I love Alan Grayson too. With Elizabeth Warren being, I don't know. you know, Secretary of State, I don't know, in a perfect world, something to that effect. But do I think that either one of them are viable in this, you know, in 2016? No. And that's a sad thing to say, but I don't think that would be possible. And I don't say that because I say that not because I think that they're not qualified. I say that because people... you know, because of what they do, you know, Elizabeth Warren is very for workers' rights. You know, if you want to look at it this way, she's really hard on corporations. You know, they need to, you know, not be the ones that get all the money in this country. And, you know, there's a lot of ways to spin that if you're on the other side and she's running for higher office than senator. She's from a very liberal state who you know, most of the people that live in Massachusetts are pretty educated people, and they read, and they, you know, they understand what she does and who she is, and that's fine. Would she
and
play
she,
well
she
in
did
state
not
of
romp
Kentucky?
To, she didn't romp to a huge victory here.
Right, and then she didn't.
Yeah, yeah, so, I mean, yeah.
Yeah,
I wanted to get into
it. Wasn't like she won in a landslide. Yeah,
yeah.
You know,
you did realize that the news of our show, this got some national play, did prompt the Boston Globe to come out with four different articles on Sunday, encouraging Elizabeth Warren to run. Have you heard that?
I saw. I saw headlines about it, but I didn't read any of the
Yeah, but it was like four different articles.
Like op-ed from there.
Yeah, urging her to, you know, it was on the, you know, the Sunday, the editorials in a different type section. And it was like four of them started on the first page and continued later and stuff. So they
It's not, not unfeasible. Well, I mean, let's go to the Wayback Machine. This time in 2007, where we were talking, everybody was talking about the same thing when Hillary was the inevitable nominee. Was polling, you know, in the stratosphere of all the polls, primarily due to name recognition. And then somebody like if you ever listen to Chris Berman on ESPN, that's why they play the game. And somebody, somebody decided to run against her. And, you know, it turned out that, you know, the idea of Hillary was not quite as appealing as the actual reality of her. And
a couple of things I wanted to, mention about that is, you know, I usually leave it to Heidi to do the research, but I thought today I'd try to confirm it. I went back to the 2008 primary results.
Right.
The map almost looks like the final election results with Barack, you know, playing the candidate from the red states. I mean, the number, you know, most places that Barack won the primary were states that did not vote Democratic in the end. You know, the hardcore, you know, liberal Democratic states went for Hillary, which I thought was interesting.
Sure.
The other thing, and I asked this, I didn't research it on purpose. Do either of you know how much historic bad blood there was between Clintons and Kennedys? Because Kennedy and the Kennedys as a family and John Kerry, who isn't like a huge figure, both came out for Barack super early. And does anybody really know that why that was?
Well, so here's what it was. Ted Kennedy was actually very close to Bill, and from Bill, he was close to Hillary. So he talked to Barack when it was still kind of a little, when it was in the air. So he did not endorse Barack until closer to the end, because
it was early.
Oh, it was early, because it was a big deal with Caroline and Ted.
I'll look it up while you guys talk, because
I thought it was later in the
campaign. Hold on just a second.
I remember it as being, I can't tell you what month it is, but I remember of it as being, very early and very surprising when, you have two people with similar ideologies and they go all in for one.
Yeah, I remember it being early on because a guy of Ted Kennedy's stature could not have.
So the date that he endorsed, January 28, 2008.
That's before New Hampshire, even. I don't know about Iowa.
Yeah.
For Christ's sake. I mean,
so it was early in.
And she still won in New Hampshire and Massachusetts.
Yeah. So this is one of those things that I remember the gist of it better than the dates, was that Ted Kennedy was very close to the Clintons insofar as they thought they had him sewn up. Like, they were friends, they had talked, they were close, yada, yada, yada. And then Teddy's mind started to shift when he was listening to Barack, and his family, the Kennedy cousins and the Kennedy grandchildren were really into Barack and not into Hillary. And so, Carolyn's kids the same way. And so they started talking to Carolyn, there's all the grandkids and the Kennedy cousins, and everybody was pretty much on the Barack side as far as the Kennedy clan went. Teddy, however, because he felt some loyalty to the Clintons, was like, well, wait a minute, what about the Clintons? And they pretty much said, no, we want to go with Barack. This, you know, he's a good guy. And so he got a meeting with Obama to talk to him, and he liked them, and he really liked them. When he met with him and talked to him, he felt like it was like Jack Kennedy reincarnated, and he said something similar to that. And so he kind of, you know, hemmed and hawed a little bit in his head, Teddy did, and then he said pretty much, fuck it, I'm gonna endorse him. And Bill and Hillary went apoplectic because he
endorsed
Obama. I'm sorry, what?
I said I knew you were going to use that word.
Oh, apoplectic?
Yeah, I just knew it was coming. Yeah. Go ahead.
So he kind of bucked what the norm was, and because of how Barack made him feel, I guess, and which is, you know, that's how Teddy dealt with his stuff a lot. I mean, he was friends with Clintons, but I don't think after he endorsed Obama was he ever really close to them again. I think they never forgave him for that because of what happened. So, that was a problem. That made him piss them off. I saw Obama a couple months after that endorsement. Sadly, Teddy didn't come to Minneapolis, but if you'd never seen Obama in his glory, which was, you know, coming out to these huge events and giving a speech, it was amazing. And, you know, you spend 6 hours waiting with people from literally all walks of life. I mean, it sounds so cliche, but, you know, there's people from small towns, different races, different ethnic groups, different, you know, you're sitting next to somebody that has a Louis Vuitton bag, and on your other side you have somebody that's pooling their money together to get a burger because they have literally $6 to their name. So it was a very interesting and, you know, interesting dynamic to see all these people waiting to listen to Barack. So the Kennedy thing was huge. Huge endorsement for him, and if I remember correctly, it set kind of set in motion other people to come out and endorse Obama over Hillary.
I mean, that said, I mean, like, you know, I'd say, you know, of the three of us, I'm probably, you know, more, you know, most supportive of Hillary.
Right.
I don't think she's a perfect human being, but my personality doesn't think anybody is. But it was interesting. There was the articles in the Globe, you know, prompted a couple of letters today. One of them ended with a paragraph describing Hillary Clinton as the most qualified candidate for the presidency since Thomas Jefferson, which I think, you know, might be a bit of hyperbole. And then, you know, another one, not the same letter, a different letter, you know, criticizing Warren for, you know, not being ready, not being up for it. I wouldn't say to be cruel, but to be flip, you know, you could describe, you know, Elizabeth Warren kind of as a one-trick pony, even though it's a very important trick. I mean, the entire economy and, you know, distribution of wealth and stuff. I mean, I have no idea if she has, you know, any better grasp of foreign policy than you and I do. I would presume she probably has somewhat more. But and then the other thing
that's,
I have
that's kind
to
of her knock. I mean, that's her knock, is that she, that's her shtick. Her shtick is the economy and her, you know, the workers and wealth distribution, and then what happens with foreign policy. I mean, you know, you kind of don't deal with these issues in the same way. You have to, you know, and I don't think she's on any committees that would be where she could, you know, cut her teeth on that issue. So that's a problem, or it could be a problem.
And then I have to get this in, and it is not as an outsider, it is as a contemporary. I really do think they're both too old. And
if I said that when I was 40,
I'd be accused of ageism, but
yeah.
I'm directly between, I think, you know, I'm a year and a half older than Elizabeth Warren and 5 months
mm-hmm.
younger than Hillary Clinton. And
mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've done a lot to improve my health lately. I'm in better shape than I've been in a long time. I don't have the friggin' energy to be president right now. I'll be honest with you. I really don't. I'm not sure. I don't. You know, I think being Secretary of State, which can be worse, you know,
right.
I think wore the hell out of Hillary. You know,
right.
I mean, I think she broke down a little health and stamina-wise doing that job. But
right. I think
on the other hand, I mean, I do.
Some awesomely crazy
in many ways, I do think she is, you know, the most qualified candidate.
Right.
I think Ronald Reagan was 70 when he was first elected. And I remember.
Ronald Reagan was a fucking disaster, too.
At the time.
I mean, putting aside my partisanship, I don't think it's easy. I mean, I think it's easy to point out that, you know, Reagan, you know, wasn't really up for the job mentally.
Right.
No.
I mean, what my point was, at the time, he was considered he was the oldest person ever elected president, and I don't think age is really talked about the same way now as it was 30 years ago. You know, McCain was, I think he was over 70 when he ran. But, you know, Hillary she'll be either 70 or real close to 70 if she runs in 2016.
Yeah.
So there's pros and cons.
I hate to be an ageist, but that does bring up another point. That how does a 70-year-old deal with the problems of someone who's 30 in this economy? You know, where you...
I think I can have as much understanding and compassion of 30-year-olds by observing my children and stuff that
I'd be more the stamina to do the job.
I don't think it's your outlook. I think it's the...
My only issue,
mental sharpness.
Right.
But.
I mean, my larger point about Hillary is that she's far removed from having to deal with. I just had to go to school, and I have student loans, or had student loans 10 years ago, or 15 years ago, or you know. A decade ago, I couldn't make rent, or I had, you know, whatever younger person issue you could look at. You know, at least Barack, you know, I don't know if you read it, you know, books, his books, you know, the Audacity of Hope and all the, you know, these other Dreams of My Father. But one of the things that he talked about was he went to the Democratic National Convention in 2000, or he attempted to, and he didn't have any money. Like, he didn't have enough money to drive from Chicago, and I can't remember where it was in 2000, but he was literally, like, penniless. He couldn't get there. He had kids already, of course. He was still paying off student loans. So he wanted to go to the DNC, but he couldn't get there because he didn't have any money. So, you know, when he's running for president, he's running for Senate, you know, state Senate and, you know, U.S. Senate, you know, that's pretty much in the back of his mind. He worked with people, quote unquote, that were in the trenches that had these issues. My thought with Hillary, and I, and, you know, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but she's so far removed from having to worry about those issues because of the fact that, you know, she's lived in, you know, she's lived a sheltered, if you want to look at it this way, sheltered life for the last 30, 40 years to the point where she may be a little bit of out of touch. And, you know, Chelsea never had to worry about anything.
And she's always been like that. She had a, you know, she had, she grew up in a, you know, an upper middle class suburb of Chicago. You know, went to a fancy private college, went to an Ivy League law school. She was not being
well. Joe Kennedy could have bought her father 100 times over, and nobody's criticizing Jack Kennedy
for having grown up too rich.
It's a little bit different, and you're right. It's not fair necessarily. I'm sorry, what?
I saw a picture of JFK campaigning in West Virginia. It was a black and white. He's standing on a chair with a microphone. We're talking to coal miners and people in Appalachia. And I was trying to picture Hillary Clinton doing that same thing.
Yeah.
You want her to have some, you know, you want her to have some redneck sympathy or redneck cred. Just look at her mother-in-law. I mean, for God's sake, you know. I mean, no, seriously, it's not like she never knew anybody poor. Look at her brother-in-law. Where's he now? In jail somewhere? Or
That's a big difference between her and her husband. I don't want to put too much comparison. So we're talking about her, we're not talking about him, but you know, he did come from humble beginnings and she did not. You know, he worked his way out of poverty to where he was, and she, you know, she did not, you know, and but it doesn't mean she can't relate to people if she would try and like, you know, she could start by not saying things. You know, try to be a little more politically astute and know that everything you say is going to be recorded and repeated and analyzed. And don't make an asinine statement like, we were flat broke when we left the White House, which maybe technically were, but they both had signed Luke. Well, she just signed a lucrative book deal, and they both had speaking engagements lined up, and neither one of them didn't have any problem, even though they couldn't get a mortgage for their house in Chappaqua. Terry McAuliffe had to co-sign it for them. They knew that as soon as they left the White House, they had more than enough gigs that were going to pay them enough money to pay off their house.
How could they not get a mortgage?
And their house in Georgetown, and make them both a whole bunch of money. So it was just a really stupid thing to say, and it just demonstrated again how she really doesn't have any way to relate to regular people, and that's what I find bothers me the most about her.
And that's a problem because. I mean, didn't his book come out first and then hers came out like 6 months later, or was it vice versa? Because they both had a book like within the same year or two, didn't they? Right after he left office?
Yeah.
So, and I think his book made more than hers. I read them both. I don't remember much about either one of them, except the fact that he did talk about Monica for a chapter, and so did she. But you're right. I mean, if any of the three of us on the phone right now said we're flat and broke, all of us, the other, you know, the rest of us could conjure up what that means to be flat and broke, meaning that would mean that you are thinking, how the hell am I going to pay my mortgage? How the hell am I going to put food on my table? How the hell am I going to pay my bills? Flat and broke for Hillary Clinton is, oh, instead of getting the house that's 20,000 square feet, I can only afford a house that's 5,000 square feet. Nah, that's hard to, you know, hard to sympathize with if you're a single mom with three kids living in an apartment in Detroit and you have to ride a bus for 20 miles, you know, 20 miles one way to get to your job every morning. So it's, you know, how do you, and I, you know, I don't want to say that if you're rich, you can't understand, because, you know, Dave, you brought up a good point. The Kennedys were never poor, at least the, you know, the Kennedys that we know, you know, Jack, Teddy, Bobby, they weren't poor throughout their life. Of course, their life was a little bit different insofar as, you know, they were taught that everything was philanthropy and to help those less fortunate. So their upbringing was a little bit different, of course, because they could. I mean, let's be honest, they could be that way because of the fact that they had money. You know, so I mean, they were looked at a little bit differently. You know, and I just, and, you know, the coal, when you were talking about the coal mine thing, it was making me remember, what was his name, Dukakis, on top of the tank.
Thanks.
And how, yeah, I mean, or, what was it, was John Kerry windsurfing or some crazy
right.
thing when he was,
yeah, no,
you know,
I mean, the tank was just kind of stupid. I think the windsurfing thing's totally unfair. I mean, I don't. You should be able to have whatever fucking hobbies you want, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I
right?
mean, George Bush Senior used to go out on his yacht. There were pictures of him doing that all the time. Nobody ever seemed to have a problem with that, even while he was waging war.
What I thought of when you started with that was Gary Hart with the bimbo on his knee. That's one of my favorites.
Yeah. I mean,
from
I
the
think
80s.
For me, if you already think that the Clintons are elitist, for lack of a better term, you know, and if you tried to get her in her pantsuit to go to West Virginia and talk to coal miners, that picture juxtaposed against people who have almost nothing just makes it look bad.
Hold on there, Obama buddy. Even though I like the president as much as you guys do, but wasn't Hillary campaigning in Western Pennsylvania and Barack said something about, well, gun. Now, what was it?
Their guns
the
and their Bible.
And God are all you have to look forward
they,
to?
They
claim
to their guns
Western.
And their Bible. Yep,
yeah,
he did
right.
say that. And
so, I mean,
I thought you were going to pull
everybody
up here as a Poland.
He lost
Pennsylvania.
Yes.
What?
Yes.
He lost Pennsylvania.
Yeah,
he
I know.
Did lose
well, that's why. I told him they were all a bunch of northern rednecks.
She had a good... She still has the same, she had a surrogate in Ed Rendell, who I think was the governor at the time.
He was.
He's still a big supporter of hers.
He's one of the good guys. As far as I'm concerned, he is one of the good guys. I like him.
Yeah.
You like Al Jeff?
I always wonder why I don't think he'll ever run for never ran for president. And any time he was asked about it, he was kind of just coy. He never even hinted that he was considering it. I think he's just got a nice, comfortable gig as a... I think he's... Does he come on MSNBC anymore? I know
he would always come on Rachel and Didn't they come on Chris Matthews all the time? Aren't he and Chris Matthews friends?
I think so, yeah.
And he's also and he does a sports talk show during football season with the Eagles announcers on local I think it's on Comcast TV or something. So you know, he's comfortable enough. You know, I think he'd rather maybe be a judge or if anything, but not
So I mean,
but
you know,
he'll be a big player this year.
He will.
The convention being in Philadelphia.
Oh, that's right.
So,
what, the Democrats are in Philadelphia?
The Democratic
convention
in Philadelphia. Yep.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yep, that's right. Yeah.
It'll be
a big
year next year. We got the Pope. We got the Pope and the Democrats coming to Philly next year.
Oh my God. So, well, you know, I mean, this discussion, just the three of us, just prove, you know, it shows what we, and we're all liberals to some point, you know, liberals to, you know, socialists, I guess you could say, somewhere in that realm, you know, and how we look at, you know, look at somebody like Hillary and go, okay, well, she does that and she shouldn't do that, but then the other point is, well, this person does that and everybody's okay with it. So, I mean, it is one of those ideas that you have to kind of think, okay, there is some things that are very superficial. One of them is, you know, how somebody dresses, obviously, which is a ridiculous question, or how they, you know, how they spend their free time. Do they windsurf or do they clear brush on their ranch? So, you know, I think it's ridiculous. It's obviously something that is not, it doesn't mean anything at the end of the day.
To her credit, I have no idea what Hillary does in her free time.
That's right.
I don't either.
I
have no idea.
Me neither.
I think the brush clearing thing really did matter. I mean, Bush bought that ranch right before he ran for president, and he branded himself as a regular guy who spent his time, noodling around on this ranch, and who knows? Maybe he had to have crews bring in brush for him to clear, you know, just for the photo ops. and same thing with Reagan and his chopping wood in his ranch in California. Those were very effective visuals brand building. So, yeah, I would be interested to know what Hillary Clinton does in her spare time.
The funny thing with you mentioned with Bush, not so much the kids, but the father, you know, the president, you know, the first president. I don't care if he lived in Texas for 50 years. When I look at him, all I see is Kennebunkport. He is an atypical Maine rich Yankee to me, no matter how he changed his life.
He's a Connecticut Yankee, yeah.
Yeah.
And I think spend most of their time in Maine anyway, and they just have a condo or something in Houston. That's their legal address, so that they don't have to pay state income tax. But they live for the most part in Maine. But the Bush, the second generation, really did grow up in Texas. They grew up in Midland, they went to Jeb. Did you read that story? It was either in the Globe or the Times about Jeb's years at that prep school.
That was recent. I'm not a Bush fan, you know.
Right.
I warmed to it, but it was a typical, you know.
A lot of
kids were badasses in high school. I mean, what's it mean?
When you're talking about Texas bona fides, like Jeb, at least he went to school. He went to college at the University of Texas. He didn't go to. He didn't go to Yale.
Well, as much as I have been in favor of Hillary Clinton, just to stop the Bushes, I would clearly support an amendment that limited the presidency to 2 terms per family, not 2 terms per person. I mean, and I'm not even sure. I think that might be a good idea, seriously.
You don't want a Chelsea presidency in 20 years?
Yeah. I mean, it might have. I guess that might have stopped FDR from getting his 4 terms, by the way. Yeah. All right.
FDR was the reason they passed that.
I know, amendment.
Yeah.
But we really haven't had any dynasty issues or possibilities until now. I mean, I don't think. Well, there is one Kennedy in Congress, right? Isn't there? Joe Kennedy's sons, Dave.
Patrick.
The one from Rhode Island with the booze issues. I'm trying to remember if he's still there. The only two. We had a trivia question last week, you know, and the 2 states outside of Massachusetts represented by Kennedys, and it was New York, of course, for Bobby, and Rhode Island for Patrick. First, I thought it was Maryland, but that daughter was like lieutenant governor or something. But no, the only another of Teddy's kids is in state politics in Connecticut, Teddy Jr.
Didn't one of Joe Kennedy's sons run for Congress 2 years ago?
Oh, yeah, no, sorry. He's in Congress, but that's assumed. Yeah, but that's within Massachusetts, so that didn't count for the trivia question. Yeah.
Okay,
no, one of Joe Kennedy's kids is currently in his second term.
Right.
Their first
yeah,
second
sure,
term.
Yeah.
But
he'll
Joe Kennedy's
third.
Kennedy was lieutenant governor of Maryland.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's
at least one Schreiber served in the Maryland state legislature. One of the Schreiber sons of Eunice and Sergeant Schreiber.
The one in Massachusetts is the youngest generation, though. He's
right.
Bobby's grandson.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's only, how old is he? He's like really young. What, early 30s? Yeah, he's not.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's not one of the Kennedy. He's not one of the Kennedy cousins. He's
no,
one
he's
of the,
Bobby's grandson.
Yeah, he's young.
He's Joe for oil.
Yeah.
You know who Joe for oil is.
Yeah.
Patrick,
I don't think there's any.
Patrick lives in New Jersey now. He lives in Absecon, right down the road from me.
What, the ex Rhode Island rep?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I don't know why, but he lives in Absecon. Maybe his wife's from there. I think he does some kind of mental health advocacy.
AFSP last year gave him an award for his work for mental health and suicide prevention. He's no longer in it in Congress, but he is. That, I think that's his thing. His thing is mental health and mental health issues, Patrick. But, yeah, he's no longer. And you said there was a Shriver that was in
There was.
Congress?
Not anymore. No, not Congress. Maryland state legislature.
Oh, okay. So that aren't anybody. Shriver.
I think Sergeant Jr. or whatever. One of the Shrivers. Mark Shriver. Local office in
Maryland. That's not Maria Shriver's kid. No.
No, it's her brother.
That's a different.
No,
it's her brother.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that generation.
Okay. By the way, it's crazy how much he looks like Bobby Kennedy. I mean, Mark Shriver. It's kind of a little creepy, even.
If we get back to the present and have dismissed Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, is there a dark horse white knight savior for the Democratic nomination? Does anybody know who the hell it could be?
Martin O'Malley seems to be running a stealth campaign. He's spending a lot of time in Iowa and New Hampshire.
What's he doing now?
Speeches. He's the former governor of Maryland, recently departed governor of Maryland. He's got a record. We in New Jersey always look longingly to the South because he's the governor that we wish we had. He's got a good liberal track record. Some of his tax hikes were not very popular. A former colleague of mine who now lives in Maryland and works for the Fed, he said, O'Malley was too much, and this was too much of a tax and spend liberal. And I thought, what's wrong with being a tax and spend liberal as long as you're spending the money in the right place? And I would keep an eye on him. If you remember Jimmy Carter, in 1975, very quietly was making the rounds in Iowa and New Hampshire when nobody heard of him. And then he just emerged above the pack. And that's been the model now. I mean, the Republicans do it more. They're all over Iowa already. But I would keep an eye on Martin O'Malley. There's Jim Webb, who is a former senator of Virginia.
He's been,
I don't know much about him.
Weight on something. I don't know, what was this?
I've
heard a lot of criticism of him.
He served one term as senator from Virginia. He was Reagan's Secretary of the Navy, I think. And then he switched parties, the Democrat, and served one term as a senator from Virginia. I'm not sure if he has any real, was really known for much. I don't really know what his stance on the issues are, but he is he has made some noise that he's considering. He's not a declared candidate.
I've heard more about him than I have about O'Malley.
That's what I'm saying.
About switching parties.
O'Malley could emerge. If he's doing the right thing, if he's got good advisors, if he's laying the groundwork for a stealth campaign while everybody else is gnashing their teeth about Hillary, and he's making himself known. Because in Iowa, you have to go to all 99 counties or however many there are, and same thing in New Hampshire.
Just to make a point, has anybody in the last 20 years really profited from their success in Iowa?
Obama.
Nah.
Huh? Obama? Okay.
One in Iowa. And,
maybe, because so many people have done
well
in Iowa and failed everywhere else.
Yes. And that's more a Republican thing.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's a good point.
But he learned how to work the caucuses, which I still don't understand. And I think he won every caucus state, and Hillary lost every caucus state because she didn't know how to run in a caucus state. Because it's a completely different than a primary election. And maybe we'll have our friend Laura on again soon to educate us on how the caucuses work. Again, because I still don't understand it, but that he
the one to take away from Iowa for Obama was that's where they learned how to work the caucus states.
When you mentioned Webb and switched parties, I had never seen till today. I went on Wikipedia about Warren. It said she was a Republican until 1996. I have no idea if that means anything or anybody knows that. Have you ever heard that before?
But
you ever heard that?
Had she held any elective office before that?
No, I don't think so. So, I mean, I don't even know if it has any credence at all, you know.
Yeah.
I was a Republican until 1965 or something, you know, but I was also 17 years old. But
so, hey, Dave, what about Deval Patrick, the former governor of Massachusetts?
What about him for what?
For running for president. Did you like him as a governor?
I have nothing like against Deval Patrick. I don't know, personality. I mean, this seems, you know, maybe a bit of a lightweight, though. I don't know. I mean, I can't, you know, you never can till they assume the position. But, you know, I can't really imagine him as a president. But I don't know. I mean, I don't think he has that much interest from, unless he's being real coy. He recently got criticized up here for signing up to push the Olympics at $7,500 a day. And then he came out and said, no, I'm just about to take a new job. I will still help the Olympics when I can for no money at all. So he may well be going back to some big corporate thing. I don't know if you know, he was close to the top, or, you know, reported to the CEO of Coca-Cola for a number of years, lead counsel or something. He has a big business background as well. As you want to talk about somebody that it was only for maybe the first 13 years of his life before he won this dream scholarship to boarding school. But he grew up in Cabrini Green, for God's sake. He is a rags to riches story to, you know, put the rest of them to shame.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I read that about him. Yeah.
Now, he grew up in Cabrini Green, and somehow some scholarship to Milton Academy, which is a, you know, a prep school right on the edge of Boston, you know, and for there he made a life for himself.
Nice. Yeah, because I read something similar about that. Yeah. But you think he's kind of a lightweight, or he would be, or he wouldn't be able to do?
I mean, I just...
Yeah, a national election.
I mean, I lived through it, but don't remember anything, you know, galvanizing from his campaigns. I mean, he had my vote from begin with because, you know, unless the Republican is, you know, very palatable and the Democrat, you know, is a total idiot, you know, I always vote Democratic. So, though I have.
Your Republicans are better than the rest of us.
I voted for a couple of Republican, or one Republican governor in the 90s because they had, you know, the Democrats put up some real fools. But there you go. How you doing?
Who was it, Weld?
I didn't know. When Weld ran, I think it was when I was living. When Weld first ran, I lived in Hong Kong. I think I might have been there both times he ran. No, I might have voted for, I think I voted for Weld's second-in-command, Salucci, even though there was nothing great about him, but he was running against a fool. Yeah.
So they don't run as a team?
No, I meant when the second-in-command later ran for governor. I mean, no.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. That's what I meant. Okay. Hold on just a sec. My wife came home. I'll be back in a couple minutes. Go on.
So the only other people that would be possibly a it would be what runners would be the Castro brothers, but perhaps they have the same issue as Deval Patrick. They're newer. They're Elizabeth Warren. They don't have a lot of experience. That whole thing.
Well, Barack Obama was only a senator for what, 2 years? 2020.
2 years. Yeah, 2 years.
Yeah. So it's there's really no such thing as too soon. I mean, when you're ready.
Right. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I mean, there's Cory Booker, who I'm not a fan of, but he is a he's an intelligent, charismatic guy with a who can raise a boatload of money wherever he goes. I have no idea. He accomplished nothing as mayor of Newark, and it was pretty much set up by Chris Christie to become the senator, because he was, from the day Christie was inaugurated, he was seen as the number one hope to run against him in 2013. So Christie, who may be an arrogant asshole, but he's no idiot. He's a really smart guy and a really politically savvy guy. One of the first things he did was make friends with Cory Booker and set him up for Frank Lautenberg's Senate seat, because at the time he was Lautenberg was in his late 80s and in failing health, so he was most likely not going to run. And he ended up he died before he filled out his term, and Christie appointed one of his cronies to fill the spot until the special election. And he called actually three special elections so that Booker would not be on the same ballot as him to fill Lautenberg's seat. So Booker's Senate seat was really a gift from Chris Christie. This is politics in the state are
Jeff, what was
interesting?
What was Booker's stance viewed as anti-traditional black values or anti-poor people? What did he do famously in that regard?
Well, he did. He's taken money from Wall Street. He has, I think he actually spoke out in defense of when Mitt Romney was being attacked for what his Bain Capital antics. He actually came to the defense of Mitt Romney on there.
Maybe that was it. I don't know.
And he took a very large gift from Mark Zuckerberg that was supposed to go to Newark's public schools. Of course, nobody knows what happened to that money. It's in a black hole somewhere. He did a lot of publicity stunts, on Twitter, like shoveling snow and rescuing the dog out of the cold, and things like that. He lived, on food stamps for a week. He lived in the projects, but for a certain amount of time. Things like that, but there really isn't any Newark miracle. He can run on. He's considered around here. He's considered a dino. But he did win election by a very large margin. Mainly because of his extraordinary fundraising abilities and his
charisma, and the fact, and his opponent was like the worst kind of teabag and whack job that just doesn't get elected to anything in this state. You know, we do have some, you know, Christie is probably the worst Republican we have, but most of the Republicans we have in this state aren't really so bad. I don't know. Cory Booker, I could see, you know, he's young, still young. I don't know if he's 50 yet. He still has time to run for president, you know, in future elections. If he can win, you know, re-election to the Senate, or maybe run for governor after Christie's term is over. I could see him running for president. And he did not come up rags to riches. His dad was an executive at IBM. He's from D.C. originally, and he grew up in Harrington Park, which is one of those little towns in northern New Jersey with one traffic light and a lot of rich people live there. Not quite Alpine, Dave, if you're familiar with New Jersey.
Upper Saddle River is mine.
Yeah, not quite Alpine, a little bit, but same type of town as like of Saddle River. So about the email thing, I just have a couple of things to say about that. Email in the old days, documents that were produced by, you know, people in office were used, you know, were archived and used as, this is not my phrase, but the first draft of history, or the source material, the first draft of history. You know, some presidents up until Nixon had recording mechanisms in the Oval Office that recorded phone calls and conversations. When you know, written communication was done either, you know, first by hand and then on a typewriter and then Xeroxed or carbon copied and filed. Now, with email being the standard manner of communication, just for purposes of historical archiving so that history can be researched and written, that stuff, you know, needs to be made part of the archives and part of the record, public record, well, unless it's classified for some reason. So to keep that stuff, you know, on a private server in your own house, you're not serving your country. She's serving her own interests, and she's deciding what is going to be, you know, made available, you know, for the archives for future consumption by researchers and what isn't. Like, you know, suppose Thomas Jefferson emailed Declaration of Independence to King George and then the email got deleted. We might not have the Declaration of Independence available to read. You know, what if God emailed the Ten Commandments to Moses and then deleted it? We wouldn't have the Ten Commandments. But my point is, email is now the standard that we use. It's the way we do business, and that stuff needs to be archived. It doesn't all need to be made public, but it needs to be archived to be available to researchers and scholars. And it's really not up to Hillary Rodham Clinton's personal opinion of what should and should not be in the national record. It you know, unless it is, you know, absolutely personal, you know, it's like stuff about her daughter or grandkid or whatever, her mother's funeral, that kind of thing. Yeah, you know, that doesn't have to be archives, but anything that happened at the State Department should be archived and made available. So that's the way I see it. It's and the fact that other people did the same thing, I don't care. You know, that might be wrong too. But even 20 years ago, 15 years ago, email was not as prevalent. You know, it wasn't as it is now. And now it's the way that people communicate in written form. So it should be archived. And it's not up to one individual to base it on her personal opinion, her personal feelings, what should be, should and should not be part of the record. That's all I have to say about that. Anybody disagree? Or have I put you to sleep?
No, I mean, you know, I mean, I guess the point that, you know, with the email thing is, you know, technically there was, what, a law after she left that they had to do it, the way that Carrie does it, which is, you know, through the government email server, and technically she wasn't wrong. But again, you know, if you're Hillary fucking Clinton, you got to do everything exactly perfectly, in my opinion, or you're going to get shit for it. And then, you know, we spent how many weeks on her emails when there was, you know, other issues with Jeb, you know, with Jeb Bush, with some things that he's been doing, but nobody speaks about that. Nobody really talks about the issues with Rand Paul, and everybody's talking about Hillary's emails, and it's, you know, goes back to my thought about everything that she does is if she does anything, it's distraction. You know, anything
right.
that's a little bit off is distraction.
But when it comes time for scholars and historians to write the books on U.S. foreign policy, you know, from 2009 to 2013, you know, what happened in the Middle East, what happened in China, what happened in all these various places. The whatever's been archived in State Department communications is a key piece of that research. And if she's, you know, eliminating things that she doesn't think should be in there, that's wrong. Because then we get, you know, we won't get a full, you know, unless somebody digs and hacks, you know, and all, you know, there is really no such thing as deleting an email, of course. I shudder to think if you think that the Republican dirty trickster didn't know that she had her own server in her own house from day one, you're dreaming. So I'm sure they've had hackers in there, and God only knows what dirt they have or might have that they're ready to drop once she declares. So that's another danger. We don't know how secure her email.com server was, you know, in her house. You know, the State Department might not even be any better, have better security. I hope it does, but you know, we don't know what kind of security firewalls or whatever she had. We don't know if her emails were encrypted or not. So there could be a wealth of all kinds of distracting juicy stuff in there that that they can that she might think is deleted. Whoever's taking the mantle from Karl Rove is just sitting on or pouring through and deciding, you know, when to release these things. Nothing is really, really private.
Right.
So,
and then it goes back to the choice that you made to do this. It obviously was a choice. And again, everything could be on the up and up, but it gives the appearance that there is something to hide, even though there probably isn't anything to hide. You know, she didn't, you know, they're trying to make this all about Benghazi. Well, she had this email server at home from the beginning of her term as Secretary of State to the end. So if you're looking at it as a, you know, in a legal perspective, she didn't do anything prior to Benghazi or after that would be, you know, that would look like she was trying to get rid of evidence or she was trying to hide anything, because she had it there the entire time. So I think that argument that it's all Benghazi related is ridiculous.
I'm not even talking about scandals. I'm talking about just for researchers to research the U.S. foreign policy during that time. State Department communications are you know, things that you would want to go through. And in, you know, like I said, in the old days, there were papers in folders in boxes. And stuff saved on microfilm or microfiche. If she released, say, you know, 50,000 emails to the State Department, 50,000 might not be a lot, really. We don't know what she was BlackBerrying between herself and her aides or her, you know, who may have been using their own personal emails for things. I don't know. I just think that it does the country a disservice by not using the State Department server, even if it wasn't required by law. The law was probably at the time hadn't caught up with the technology. The law still hasn't fully caught up with technology. But email is the way things are done now, so there has to be new rules about how emails are conducted and where they're stored and how they can be retrieved if they have to be retrieved.
Right. So, I know obviously she hasn't said that she's running, although I can't imagine now at this point that she's not going to be running. We have about 6 minutes left. Are you currently on the fence about Hillary, or if she runs, you will not be voting for her, or is it too early for you to say?
It depends on who's running in the primary.
Yeah. So, you know, currently the last poll that I read said that any matchup against pretty much any of the, in fact, all of the Republican possibilities for president, she wins handily 10 to 15% or 10 to 15 points above whoever they're running, whether it's Jeb Bush, whether it's Rand Paul, people like Chris Christie and Ted Cruz barely even register. She just blows them out of the water. Do you think at this point that there is anyone that on their side, not on our side, that does have the potential to beat her in a general election?
I wouldn't. Well, Jeb Bush has the fundraising power. I would not put it past the stupidity of the American people to vote for Jeb Bush.
So we have, let's see, we have about, well, we have 4.5 minutes left. So did you want to say some final words about Hillary?
I'm going to cede the floor to our caller.
Oh, he dropped.
Oh, he did? Oh. Okay.
And he dropped like a minute or so ago.
Yeah. Well, I'm kind of disappointed that, like, all the people that said they were going to call didn't call. I would like to have the Mitt Romney's underwear guy. I wish he would have called in because he was he's an anti-Hillary and guy, and that would have been interesting. But I think we had a good talk discussion not only about her but about the election in general. We'll be talking about it more. I'm glad we didn't talk about Ted Cruz. I don't have anything to say about him. Bush and, you know, possibly Scott Walker might be a, you know, is a guy who survived a recall and also got reelected. No matter how bad he is, he's somebody who can really appeal to the Republican base. So I wouldn't count him out. And again, keep an eye on Martin O'Malley, who's just running a low profile retail undeclared campaign right now, and he could emerge as a serious contender for people who want somebody other than you know, he could be the anti-Hillary. I don't think it's going to be Elizabeth Warren. If it's anybody, it's going to be him.
So we have 2.5 minutes left. Yeah, I was going to say, you know, it would be interesting to see there. I think that she needs a primary run. I don't think that she should run unopposed. I don't think that that would give her any sort of leeway or any sort of momentum going into a general election. So, I think she needs many, actually, good Democrats, good liberal Democrats to run against her in the primary that makes her go to the left. I think that that's important, especially in a lot of the issue, you know, where people have issues with her, which is, you know, people call her a corporatist and people have an issue with her foreign policy thought. As far as I know, that's one of my biggest issues, is that it seems like she wants to go with military intervention much more than I would prefer, or, you know, that's always the direction to go. And, you know, that's been, you know, we've spent so much money in the past, 14 years on military intervention, that it seems to be everybody's got military intervention fatigue in this country. So, I, you know, there needs to be other ways to deal with issues that are, you know, national security related. And, you know, having a bunch of liberal Democrats in going against her in the primary may make her look at other alternatives regarding that. At least we could only hope, I guess. So there's 60 seconds. Do you have anything else to say?
I'm done. So we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens next week. We'll come up with something by the weekend.
Okay.
Who knows what's going to happen in the news. And that person we were talking about earlier, or that we messaged about, might be available.
Good. Okay.
But she will do it at some point. I'm just not sure when, because they still have to plan the funeral.
All right.
So, I thank everybody for listening. Thank Diane for chatting on the board. I'm sorry I didn't get a chance I was too busy flapping my gums to respond to your comments. But you ought to call in I think we just got cut off.
Just now. All right. See you guys later.
Okay. All right, bye.
All right. Bye.